In part by Euromart International Food Store on Springfield and Locust in Champaign, offering 200 kinds of chocolate, 40 kinds of coffee, and 200 kinds of tea. The Euromart hosts a cheese and olive tasting from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Today's programming is made possible in part by a grant from Birkenstock Concepts by Heel to Toe in downtown Urbana. For over 25 years, offering all sizes and widths of Birkenstocks, from clogs and sandals to work, dress, and sport shoes. Birkenstock Concepts offers repair and modification services and a certified podorthist and orthotist on staff.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, we're going to talk about urban vegetable gardening with Chuck Voigt. He is Principal Research Specialist in Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois, and he joins us from time to time during the year, especially during the growing season, to answer our questions about herbs and vegetables. He is co-author with J.S. Vandermark of the book Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. Listeners, you can join us with your questions about herbs and vegetables. We look forward to hearing from you this afternoon. The telephone number is in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. How are you, and how's the garden?
Well, it's weedy. We've had two wet weekends in a row, at least where a lot of my stuff is, and the weeds have really taken advantage of that. And if you can believe what Ed told me last night, the last thing on the 10 o'clock weather snippet, it's going to be a fair chance to get some more wet stuff this weekend. But hopefully I can get out and murder a few weeds on Saturday and feel a little better about things.
Yeah, I got the same chore waiting ahead of me. We've done pretty well in a couple of beds, but we need to spend some attention elsewhere now. The one thing, though, right now is maybe even this afternoon after I get home from work, get out there. The soil is nice and moist, so they do, if you're hand plucking them, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
Not too bad. And today's a beautiful day, so you don't mind.
Right.
You don't mind the chore today.
Yeah, we've certainly had much more disgusting days than this to be out there to really
yeah.
working at it.
It's been, it seems to me that it's been quite warm and humid.
Seems that way to me, too.
Yeah, pretty early. I mean, May usually is a pretty pleasant month, but here it is already. We've seen, you know, air conditioning.
Right.
So have things charged ahead then in...
I think probably as I've watched the progression of spring perennial flowers, for instance, we might have been, you know, up to a week ahead in some instances. I don't know that it was frighteningly off-kilter. The start, I think, in the spring was sort of in the normal range, so we didn't jump ahead too much coming out of winter.
Do you have everything in at this point?
Not so much, no.
No? Okay.
I need to put on that.
Weeds,
as Lil Abner said, I need to put on that amazing burst of speed and get a lot of things done. Fortunately, most of the research stuff that I look at, not by accident, is warm weather stuff so that I can do it after the school year is over.
Okay.
So I'm going to have a big sweet potato planting day as soon as...
How many sweet potatoes are you going to plant this year?
The same 44.
I managed to
hold myself back from going any deeper into that.
Yeah. Let's talk with a listener. Caller on line one in Urbana. Hello.
Hello. Chuck, I'm hoping you could tell me what to do with tarragon. I didn't expect it to live, and it has, and now it's a big green thing.
Yep.
It'll do that.
Yeah.
Some of the gardening books make you think that tarragon's not real winter hardy, but if it doesn't sit wet over the winter, it'll take 30 below, which pretty much gets us through anything we get here.
So what should I do?
Well,
now that I've got it, what the heck do I do?
Snip it on chicken, snip it on pork, snip it on fish. If it's really ahead of you, you might want to infuse it in some white wine vinegar.
Ooh. Uh-huh.
That really captures all the delicate notes of the flavor. You would just harvest the clean leaves. Our friend Marge Clark taught me to warm the vinegar. Put the warm vinegar over the leaves in a preferably a glass bottle, but I've actually done it in the plastic bottle that cheap vinegar comes in.
I'll be darned.
Let it steep for 3 or 4 weeks, and then strain it through a couple of layers of coffee filter. Then bottle it up, and you can use it for up to a year or more. You get that wonderful tarragon flavor anytime you want it in salad dressing or whatever.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful. But the main thing is just keep cutting its hair.
Probably, yeah, like a third of it at any one time.
Okay.
It has a tendency toward the end of the summer to start going into a dormancy, and if mm-hmm. you do keep cutting it, it seems to put off that point in the end of the season where it tends to go to brown. So
okay.
It's actually almost better to harvest fairly heavily
okay.
and regularly.
Could I ask you one more question?
I think you could.
Oh, bless your heart. Okay, about propagating lavender. I didn't expect lavender to come back, and I've been really fortunate.
You seem to have very low expectations.
I guess so. That didn't sound good, did it?
Well, there are some pretty hardy lavenders, right?
They are, and I think they take as much damage in the hot, humid days of midsummer as they do sometimes in the winter.
I'll be darned. Uh-huh.
It depends. If we got better snow cover in the winter, lavender would be much more hardy here because it has that semi-evergreen foliage, and you get mm-hmm. the sunshine and the wind in the winter, and that can be a problem. But the hardier ones usually will come up from the base pretty dependably. And your questions about propagation?
Right. Were the branches kind of swoop down and go to the dirt? Could I just cover that and have it root?
Sure. You can layer that. That's what we call that. You take a branch like you're talking about. You might want to just nick it with a knife.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit of a wound, and then put a small stone or something over it or cover it with soil. Some people will make a little, like a big hairpin kind of a thing out of wire.
Like a landscape pin.
There you go. Mm-hmm. And pin it down with that. And, you know, by next year it should have, you know, started to branch out, and you can tell it it's its own little plant, and then you can cut it off and move it where you want to propagate it.
Okay.
If you want to get really serious, you can do lots and lots of stem tip cuttings and put those in something where you, like a mini greenhouse kind of a thing.
With rooting hormone, you mean?
Rooting hormone would be better if you don't happen to have that around. When it's growing actively, it'll root pretty well without.
Mm-hmm.
On small scale, like the clear-topped plastic things that roasted chickens come in, works pretty well. You could probably get 15 or 20 cuttings in there. After they start to root, you'd want to, you know, prop it open a little bit so that they don't get too steamed. You want to keep it out of the direct sunlight. But
it
propagates fairly easily. And of course, I say that I have access to an intermittent mist system. But I think it would work pretty well just in a clear plastic covered flats.
Well, I'll give it a try both ways.
Right.
Well, thanks for being on.
Well, you're welcome.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line 2 in Urbana. Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. The tarragon. Put it in your cheese sandwiches. Put the leaves in salad. Or just eat the leaves out of hand with your meal.
There's a tarragon fan.
Yeah.
It's great in eggs, too.
Yes.
Yeah, they used to have you chew a bunch of leaves if you're going to have dental surgery or something, because it actually has a numbing effect.
It's a little astringent, yes. Mm-hmm. I hadn't realized that.
Yeah, that's why it became used with fish so much, is because it kind of deadens the taste buds on your tongue, and ancient times when the fish maybe was around too long before you started, it wasn't a bad thing to kill off a little of the fishy flavor. So it's all sorts of interesting things about tarragon and its intricate internal chemistry.
It's a great herb anyway.
It, absolutely. It's a queen of herbs.
Thanks. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we talk with a listener on the toll-free line, a caller in Indiana. Good afternoon.
Hi. Two things, grape, arbor, sort of, and lilacs.
Okay, grape, arbor, and lilacs.
I'm a wildflower person, and I have a hell of a time in the city to do what I want to do. So I've been basically letting what has been there before in terms of precedent, let it grow. And there are times when I have to protect bushes and trees around the grapes. And I just started this year, and I've been just sort of clipping off the fresh growths around to see if that'll stop them from, you know, continuing outward and downward and around and stuff. And I wonder if that is actually true. And, you know, if it is, then I can perhaps, you know, cut back a little bit more to give it more of a, you know, a nice shape, I guess. And the lilac is pretty old, and a small child could get into it and not touch a leaf. And I wonder if it's possible to cut back, and if you can, how far should you go? They're approximate. One is approximately 10 feet tall now at the highest part. And there's another one that someone decided to try to get rid of but never did, and it's sort of ugly, but it still has leaves and stuff, and it's probably around 8 to 9 feet tall, but it's been cut back to it's only like a foot and a half wide, you know, and maybe 2 feet one way. And I was wondering what I could do with them to make sure that they bloom better, if at all possible, and whether or not I can cut them back to make them more bushy instead of vertical.
Okay. Well, that's a long series, but we'll try to start and do them in order. You have a grapevine that's kind of overgrowing where you would want it to be.
Yeah, it was originally used, I'm guessing, as a blocker. There's a fence that was put in some time ago, I guess, in terms of the timber I can look at and what, you know, what kind of wire they use.
Mm-hmm.
And then the grapevine was put on it, and you know, one time it was probably looked very nice, you know, probably just, you know, grew along the fence and was, you know, 4 feet high, and that was it. But now it reaches some places where I've let it go. Of course, I've helped it somewhat, you know, 10, 12 feet in the air straight up. And the parts that go out sort of into the alley, I've been clipping off as best I can. So that, you know, sort of the invisible wall where the alley starts, you're not technically not to have anything growing in there in terms of the city's ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a wall of this stuff, you know, with invisible shear to keep two elderly ladies happy, basically.
Okay. While it's growing, you can trim grape back, you know, to keep it within the bounds that you want it to be in.
Okay.
That shouldn't be a problem. Over in early spring or late winter, when it's dormant, you could go in and do renewal pruning on that. Grapes that people grow for the fruit, you would actually, on an annual basis, probably take out 75% or 80% of the wood just to force new growth every year.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably don't want to be that aggressive while it's growing.
Okay.
But just cutting it back, you know, where it's getting out of bounds, it sounds like it's a very healthy grape, and,
yes,
and it's,
yes,
it's going to be able to stand that pretty well.
Yeah.
A lot of the wine-producing areas, they'll cut off a lot of the foliage during the growing season to get the balance between leaves and fruit clusters that they want. So
okay.
Grapes are pretty resilient.
Okay.
Now, as far as lilacs, are these multi-stemmed clumps?
Yes, I think so. I think I would call it that. They're just starting to come out, still green.
Mm-hmm.
None that I saw this morning are even close to being lavender or anything like that.
Okay. Typically, you would prune lilacs right after they bloom.
Okay.
Because that, then, you know, you're not taking off next year's flower buds necessarily.
Okay.
If they're overgrown and getting kind of sparse, what I would normally do is you know, look at the overall plant, choose the worst looking stems, the oldest looking stems, and probably take those back clear to the ground.
Okay.
And leave some young, supple canes if you got that coming up.
Okay.
And then gradually let those be the new body of the plant.
Okay.
That will, at least temporarily, that'll probably bring down the overall height of the plant, but eventually they'll grow back up and be big again. So right after flowering, you want to do that. Depending on what the sunlight situation is,
it's good.
Okay, then that shouldn't be limiting whether or not they flower. Some lilacs, as they flower, tend to set up a lot of seed heads, and we would recommend probably that if it's not, if you have the time, you go in and clip those off individually, just right at the base of the flower. Don't go down into the stem, because usually the first two buds below last year's flower is where next year's flower buds are. So
okay.
Just take off the flower head so that the plant doesn't waste any energy making seeds, because chances are you're not going to grow any new lilacs from seed.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Is there any more?
No, that's all I can think of.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Other calls are invited. No one's waiting at the moment. If you'd like to talk with Chuck Voigt, give us a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. I didn't realize that you could do such a significant trim job on grapevines. That's a really...
Typically if you have one that's been trained on a forearm system or whatever, where you're actually growing it to harvest the clusters of fruit, what you do is it only bears fruit on what it grew last year. So what you usually leave is one stub with a couple of buds and one longer arm with 10 or 12 buds on each of those four. You know, it's like two wires and going each way. That's the forearm niffin system is the basic one. And then each year the short one grows longer, and that'll be your bearing cane the next year, and then you cut back the one that bore fruit last year. And I think you can go as high as 85%. That's why when you see those French vineyards with the big old
that's right,
trunks of stuff, there's very little sticking out there, because those French wine grapes are so vigorous that if they aren't really whacked back every year, you know, they would just kind of close in the rows and take over. So, yeah, the way we grow grapes to get the fruit is very aggressive from a pruning standpoint, but you have to kind of know what you're doing, so you're pruning off the right stuff.
The right stuff. Okay. Yeah, that's right. You know, I have seen photographs of vineyards, and it looks like, well, where's the plant? You know, but
right. It's like even when you drive up into Michigan to the Concord growing area where they're just growing it for grape juice, you go through there after they've pruned it, and you can barely you can see the vertical going up, but as the other stuff is tied to the wires and really, they kind of disappear until they start to grow again. They've pruned off so much stuff.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener, a listener joining us on the toll-free line this afternoon from Charleston. Hi.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Okay. We just recently moved into an area where there is a lot of deer, and we planted a rose bed, and we had five rose bushes, and they ate all of them down. And so and they also got all the tomatoes and a lot of other flowers. But I did put deodorant soap because I'd heard that would work around the tomatoes, and that didn't seem to bother them. So I was wondering if you had an idea.
Deer can be a persistent problem, especially once they get habituated to the idea that there's good stuff to eat at your place. Because deer are mammals and do have taste buds that can sense like hot peppers, you might want to mix up a concoction of garlic and as hot a peppers as you can find and spray that on things after every rain. it might make it taste bad enough that they move on and eat somebody else's. You would think as thorny as roses are, they would leave them alone, but they don't.
I would think they would, but they ate all the buds off and all the stems. So our rose garden was very pretty, but now it looks kind of sick.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. The deer population is just exploding, and, mm-hmm. and they're getting braver and bolder all the time.
So try garlic and pepper?
Hot pepper.
I think so. And you might want the soap thing sometimes is effective. Also, if you can go to a barbershop or a hairdresser and sprinkle a lot of human hair around, the scent of that sometimes would help. I think that works better with the wilder the deer, the better that works. If they're already used to being right in the same vicinity as humans, I'm not sure that that's as effective as it might have been 20 yeah. years ago when they stayed back off in the woods and.
Now someone told me they
interact.
Tried that and it didn't work. So,
yeah. The other thing is blood meal. You can use that. It has some nitrogen fertilizing value. Smells like somebody was attacked and hurt there. Sometimes that'll make them a little skittish. But again, the tamer they get, the less likely they are to react to the common sorts of mm-hmm. fright mechanisms.
Okay. Well. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, good luck. Are there plants that deer don't like?
Yeah, there are. And every once in a while in the garden magazines, you'll see an article where they have a list. I haven't sat down and figured out.
Yeah.
It's easier to remember the things that they like hostas, when you've seen
yeah.
them basically grazed back to the ground and some of the other things. You, which... I don't understand what the attraction is. If sheep or something eat too much ewe, they die, but deer seem to just raise the dickens with them over the winter. So apparently they have pretty strong stomachs and they're pretty resistant to some things that would kill lesser critters.
Yeah, I was talking with Chuck before we got started this afternoon about the rabbit population in the Urbana neighborhood where I live, and we've just now kind of gotten ourselves around to the idea that, well, what we plant, we'll try and pick things to plant that they don't like, because there's so many of them, and they're becoming fearless. They're, you know,
I call them suburban rabbits.
They're used
to
us.
They'll come out and lie there and just look at you because they know you're no threat.
I mean, you have to like chase them in order to get them to move on.
Well, then they look kind of offended. They kind of look back over their little bunny shoulder and say, "Now, wait a second."
And they're so cute. Now they're having their
yeah. That's
litters.
Another defense mechanism.
Yeah.
If you taste good, look cute.
let's talk with another listener, caller in Fairbury on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. We enjoy your show, and I was wondering where would a person be able to get. To start a vinegar process.
You stumped us.
If you're not if you, I, I know if you have like apple cider and just kind of let whatever falls out of the air into it, it'll first harden up and then go on to vinegar if you don't.
Yeah.
Do anything to stop it. But I think to get a good vinegar, like you say, you would want some sort of a starter.
Yes, that's what I was wondering.
I don't know if any of that is alive in like the vinegar that we buy or not. Mm-hmm. You might try, getting some organic cider vinegar or something and just putting a teaspoonful of that or something in there to see if there's any live versions of whatever it is that pushes that process forward.
Yes. Well, now I have a nephew in California who makes wine vinegar. Could he send some mother back here, or would that transport?
It might. It might. You'd have to have it in a you know, something pretty secure so it doesn't get damaged on the way, but
yes.
I would think if he had some active mother and sent you what would you call it, a little bottle, a vial
yes.
of that, and then once you get it going, if if you keep it going, then I think you'd be in business.
Yes.
I know it's interesting because it's like they say sourdough bread tastes different in different parts of the country because the wild yeast that's in the air is different. So I would suspect that to some extent vinegars would be that way too. So you'll have a California based vinegar starter that way. And
yes. Okay.
Sounds okay.
And I would add that I don't know if you have access to the internet, but if you just put into your search mechanism vinegar starter,
yes,
you'll come up with a lot of hits.
Well, that's an idea, too.
And they have all kinds of apparently this is quite the hobby,
yes,
vinegar making, and there are beautiful little barrels that you can get and
wow,
all kinds of stuff. So,
yes. Well,
yeah. I know I've In Michigan, I've toured the cider plants where they also have the vats where they make vinegar, and it's quite a process.
Yes. Now, does that work better in a wooden barrel or glass container? Would that make any difference?
I think you're boy.
I'm not much of a vinegar maker, so I'm kind of remembering wooden vats, but I'm not positive.
Yes.
It probably would affect, you know, if you're a vinegar connoisseur, it would affect the tannins and just like wines, it would have, whether it's aged in wood or aged in stainless steel or whatever would affect some of the levels of flavor in it.
Yes.
Yeah, you might check at the library for books on homemade vinegar.
Yes, okay. Well, thank you. Enjoy your program.
Okay, thanks for the call. That sounds like kind of an interesting hobby, doesn't it?
We'll see now.
Now we're on to something
entirely get your mind off the rabbits
different.
And go down in the basement and make vinegar.
There you go. Let's talk with another listener. Next, we're going to go to a listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hi. I did the same thing you did, Celeste. I Googled vinegar starter, and the previous caller might look at a home brewing magazine for supplies, mm-hmm, or maybe a wine magazine for supplies. Those might be good sources for vinegar starter.
Yeah, sounds
but
good.
My question was about controlling trumpet vine, campsis, I believe. Is that
mm-hmm
right?
Campsis radicans.
Radicans is awfully radical. In fact, the spot I have it growing in, I've just sort of given up.
because it's so rampant?
Yeah, it's rampant. I mean, I like it traveling up the trellis that's mm-hmm there. But it's just coming out everywhere else, away from the main trunk.
Mm-hmm. They have that tendency.
Yeah. Any suggestions?
Well, I think to some extent you could treat it at least similarly to a grapevine. As it comes out of winter, go in and pretty aggressively prune it. Prune it away from anywhere that you don't want it to be. That will just in and of itself will sort of concentrate it where you do want it to be up on the trellis. Again, I have a feeling trumpet vine blooms on the growth that came out last year, but I'm not positive about that. But you would want to leave enough of that so that you get the flowers for the hummingbirds and whatever. But I think you can prune it like the grapes, fairly, you know, somewhat during the growing season, but once a year during the dormant season, I think you could probably go in and do some pretty major surgery, and it would bounce right back as soon as it starts to grow.
Thanks. What's the general timeline and care advice for berry canes, like blackberry and raspberry?
Okay, blackberries and black raspberries, as the new canes come up, when they get up 3 or 4 feet, normally you would take the tip out of them so that they branch, and then let them grow through the rest of the season. And in late winter, early spring, you would go out, cut out the old canes, cut back the branches on the new canes. And that would be done before they start to grow in the spring.
Okay.
Red raspberries, depending on if you have the the ever-bearing ones or not. The old traditional June bearers, you would not head back as they grow new canes. You just let them grow, and then again in the dormant season, right before they start to grow, you would cut out the old canes and trim back the new canes somewhat, and maybe thin them out, because red raspberries tend to become thicker than is good for them. If they're the ever-bearing type, you can do one of two things. Some people just go through first thing in the spring and mow them off. They don't even attempt to get a spring crop from them. They just get those new canes growing up strong and then get a really, really big fall harvest on the new canes. If you want to get both, then you would go through first thing in the spring, cut out the dead canes from last year and cut back the ones that started to bear last fall. You can tell how far down they start at the top and flower down. Usually they get down 7 or 8 nodes in the fall. You cut off the part that already bloomed last fall, because that's not going to bloom again, and then they'll start blooming from there down. So that's what you do with red raspberries.
Okay. Sounds like a lot of work, but worth it.
Well, yeah, it's the red ones are not as stickery. The black berries have like fish hook thorns that you usually shed quite a bit of blood when you're out doing that. So leather gloves with high gauntlets is the order of the day for the black berries and black raspberries.
Okay. Thanks again.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. It's worth it though, isn't it? Ooh. Okay. Next listener, caller in Champaign, line 3. Good afternoon.
Hi. I got a question about strawberries and one about orchids. Can you answer either one of those?
Possibly.
Okay. My strawberry area is now a patch because I did not set runners. What is the most efficient way to get it back into rows? With a lawnmower or?
Well, as soon as they get done bearing,
mm-hmm.
mow them off, then get if you don't have a tiller, rent a rototiller, mark it off, leave maybe 6 to 8 inch strips
mm-hmm.
with 2 or more foot strips that you till up.
Okay.
And then that little strip will come up and you know, they'll feel rejuvenated and very quickly again fill in the other area with new daughter plants. So
you're saying mow the whole patch, not just
mow everything, strip. Because there are some leaf diseases that can be a problem. Mow it, also rake it off after you mow it.
Okay.
And then go in and till out probably 2/3 to 3/4 of what you are, leave little narrow rows.
Gotcha.
And those will go ahead and form a new matted row, and it won't be quite as productive as if you'd started from new virus-free plants, but usually that will rejuvenate them enough to make most people happy.
They're extremely productive now, so I don't have any problem with that. They've just have gone rampant.
Right. It makes them easier to pick if they're in at least sort of discernible rows.
Right. The other question is about a wild orchid that was in my yard when I moved there. It's purple. It's absolutely gorgeous. It looks like a miniature, the very large orchid. But they're only about 1 inch in diameter, and they come up on a stem like cultivated orchids do, like that you keep in the house, and the leaves are long and narrow, but they winter over. And I haven't found them in a book, and no one I've talked to knows what these are.
Wow.
They're not a lady slipper because they're purple.
They don't have the slipper?
No, they don't have the cup.
They're open.
Yeah.
With the fused lips on the bottom.
Yeah.
Boy, I don't know. The TA for my class is an orchid specialist.
Oh.
When does it flower?
It's flowering now. It started about 2 weeks ago.
If somehow you could get that to me, I could.
If you want to hang on, I'll ask Henry to get your number.
Okay.
And we'll have Chuck's TA get in touch
with you. Yeah, because he's doing his thesis research this summer, so
he's
around, and he's my orchid specialist.
This would be a good time to come look at them because they're beautiful.
Okay.
Excellent. Sounds like you have a wonderful plant there.
I do.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. And we're going to get that number down. You know, when you have, when you're trimming back plants, and you've got something that might have the potential for a leaf disease, what should you do with the remnants, that this, you know, the stuff that you've trimmed off. You probably don't want to put that on the compost.
No, you don't want to put it on the compost. You want to put that in your landscape waste bag and ship it off to be somebody else's problem, unfortunately.
Yeah.
If you live out in the country, you know you can do a little brush pile and do away with it that way. But more and more of us live in places like Champaign-Urbana where that's not legal or really responsible. So, but yeah, get it out in a way.
Okay, let's talk with another listener. Caller in Savoy, line one. Hi.
Hi, I have a question that's a little bit outside of the garden, but hoping you can help. I have a maple tree in our front yard that does not seem to be thriving at all, and was wondering sort of how we can tell if it really is sick or who we should contact to look at it to give us some advice.
Do you have any idea what kind of maple it is?
Do we know what kind of maple it is? We don't. No, we're really not too sure.
Okay, because some of the silver maples this year had a really, 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 really heavy seed load, and sometimes when they make so many seeds that the foliage just kind of doesn't happen until after the seeds ripen up and fall off, which they have done recently.
Okay.
So it may just be that it was a little over-optimistic in how many seeds it set up during the pollination season, and they usually come back and grow right out of that. But
I see. We're thinking maybe it's not a silver maple, but we're not very good at that. But if it is, that could explain it.
It turns yellow in
the fall. I don't know if that helps to narrow it down.
Well, not necessarily. Yellow is a fairly common maple color. Have the seeds fallen off of it recently?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, so silver maples have been shedding them recently, so it probably is not. Sugar maples hold on to their seeds till the fall. Norway maples hold on to their seeds till the fall. And they don't usually seem to produce seeds to the detriment of producing leaves. So
I see.
It could be most anything. Maples are subject to verticillium wilts, where usually one side or part of the treetop will die fairly suddenly.
That's actually what it looks like. It looks pretty lopsided.
Well, if it's verticillium, then it's a problem because it's probably not going to get better, and it's probably also not going to be a place you want to replant a maple tree because they seem to be susceptible. Some cultivars of maple are really susceptible.
I see. Okay, so might be wanting to think about a different tree.
but don't give up on it too quickly because, you hate to do that. But,
yeah, exactly.
Might want to talk with an arborist.
Somebody who specializes in trees could probably come out, probably look at the bark right, if there's dead bark on it, he would look right where the dead bark meets the healthy bark and scrape along there and see. With the wilt diseases, the plumbing of the plant, the conductive tissue gets plugged up with the fungus, and that's what kills it. So usually it discolors the vascular bundles and that sort of thing. So, yeah, if you can get a tree specialist to give it a look, he could tell pretty quickly what that is.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Mattoon on the toll-free line. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello. There. Go ahead.
Hi. I recently bought a home in Mattoon, Illinois, and I have AstroTurf on my front porch. And every time I come home, there's like 3 and 4 cats on it. And it takes me forever to get the cat hair out of it. And I wondered if there's anything I could put on the porch to keep them away.
Well, unlike rabbits and deer, blood meal would attract them rather than repelling them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Cat repellent. They sell the stuff that repels dogs.
They do sell. I know that there are products out there. I couldn't say.
Also, I would like to plant some peony bushes.
Okay.
And I'd like to know the opportune time to do that.
Peonies move the best actually in very late summer or early fall. At that point, a lot of the energy has gone back down into the big fleshy roots, and the buds have set up for the following year, and that's real ideal peony moving time. The other time, they're certainly most available. If you go to garden centers and stuff, they're most available first thing in the spring, and that's not a bad planting time. It's just that if you have somebody who's wants to divide their peonies, or if you have some that you're gonna move, probably late August, early September would be good.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, good luck with the cats. But there are products like that. I would go to the garden center or call a veterinarian and.
Yeah,
they're, I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe
I've never used them.
Set up a catnip center somewhere else.
There you go.
Track them away from your AstroTurf.
I don't know if it would be practical. Then would you want to spend any time on it? But I suppose if it was wet, they wouldn't want to sit on that.
Well, it crossed my mind again to spray it with that garlic and hot pepper, but you give yourself the hot foot and the garlic foot if you walked on it barefoot. So that wouldn't.
You don't want to do that. We have just a couple of minutes left here this afternoon with Chuck Voigt. If you've got a question, give us a call on herb and vegetable gardening. That's what we're focusing on here this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. So before we wrap up here, is there anything you'd like to talk about? There is a call coming in, so...
Okay, let's do that.
We'll be saved by the bell here.
Yeah, I don't have to extemporaneous or anything.
Okay. As soon as we get this listener lined up, we'll go and talk to this caller on line one. Good afternoon. Champaign.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have two sort of slightly related questions, but they're both about pest control. First of all, we have a bunch of potted jasmine plants. We put them out on the porch during the summer months, and they do quite well. And then we take them inside during the winter months and keep them in the basement under some supplemental lighting. And this year, they developed woolly aphids, which pretty much went rampant around them. And so when we took them out this year, we pruned them way back to get rid of the woolly aphids. And I'm a little worried about what might happen as far as maybe the pests or the eggs or whatever being in the soil, and if there's anything else we can do to make sure that they don't reemerge on the leaves. And then the second pest control problem is more associated with the roses that we have planted outside that tend to have a lot of Japanese beetles or something in the summer months. And in both cases, I'm trying to control these pests without using insecticides and such because we have children, or young children around the house. So I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
As far as the cottony aphids, just inspect very frequently. If you see anything like that coming again, get some rubbing alcohol and a Q-tip, and just individually wipe the little guys off. Eventually, you should get ahead of them that way. Usually when they're outside, the Asian lady beetles and all those things will kind of not eradicate them from the plant, but certainly keep them under control. It's when you bring them inside and all those other things aren't available that they tend to blossom out. That's probably my best bet for diligence would be my recommendation for that.
And the Japanese beetles on the roses come next month.
Right.
Probably, huh?
Right. Usually they're real active by the 4th of July. Some people say that if you can kind of discourage them when they first arrive, that they change food sources every 3 days or something. So if you can kind of break out the cycle early. It's hard if you won't use a little chemical backup, it can be a little difficult. If you don't have a lot, hand pick them,
mm-hmm.
Knock them into a can that has something in it that they'll fall into and die quickly. You might be able to do that. The problem is once one starts feeding, they emit a thing that says, "Come on, good grub here, everybody." Come on over. So You might be successful with hand picking. You're probably not going to be successful to a level that you're going to be really pleased with, because they love the taste of roses.
Well, it's a tough. It's not for sissies gardening, is it?
No. When I get my time machine, I'm going to go back and stop whatever it was, that accidental introduction of Japanese beetles, because that was a dark day in American history.
Mm. Well, happy summer.
Yeah, you too.
And we'll see you again maybe in a couple weeks, huh?
Sure.
It again? Okay, sounds good. Chuck Voigt has been our guest this afternoon here on the program. I don't know, the last couple of hours I've been wanting to call you Chuck Voigt. Chuck Voigt, my friend. He is a research specialist in agriculture, natural resources, and environmental sciences at the University of Illinois. And he's a good guy and a good sport, and he joins us from time to time during the growing season, and in fact, throughout the year, to answer our questions about herbs and vegetables. It's 8 minutes before 2 o'clock, and settlement prices are in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Tom.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. There you are.
There you are. Hello. Good
come
afternoon.
Come in.
It sort of seems like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We have finished a fairly light pre-holiday trading day on the Chicago Board of Trade, with wheat ending down on some late fund selling. The corn ended up today on a combination of weather and demand pressure. The soybeans, the new crop, ended up with the short covering being the news of the day. The old crop lower on the close because of some demand questions. July wheat had a high today of 370 and three quarters, the low 361. The settle near the low at 362, down 7 1/4. September wheat had a high of 381, a low of 369 and a half, settled at 370 and a quarter, down 8. December wheat, the high 390, the low 381, settled at 381 and a half, down 7 1/2. March wheat had a high of 396 and a quarter, the low 388, settled at 390, down 6 1/4. And the May of 05 wheat, with a high of 399, the low 392, settled at the low 392, down 7. Into the corn now, where we had an up day. July had a high of 306, the low 296, settled at 304, up 5 1/2, or 5 1/4 rather. September corn at a high of 301 and 3 quarters, the low 293 and a half, settled at 299 and 3 quarters, up 5 1/4 as well. December corn, the high today 299 and 3 quarters, the low 290, settled at 297 and a quarter, up 6. March for next corn, or next year's corn, 304 the high, the low 295, settled at 301 and a half, up 5 3/4. May of 05 corn, the high today 307, the low 298 and a quarter, settled at 305 and a half, up 5 3/4 cents. The July next year corn, the high 307, the low $3 even, settled at 304 and 3 quarters, up 5 1/2. And as we move out on the schedule, September of 05 corn at a high today of 285 and a half, the low 283, settled at 284, up 3. December far side corn, the high 272 and a half, the low 269, settled at the low 269, down 1. July oats today had a high of 149 and a quarter, the low 145, settled 147 and 3 quarters, up 1/4. September had a high of 155 and a half, the low 152, settled 153 and a half, up 1. Into the beans now, where we saw a line between old crop and new crop. The old finished lower today. July had a high today of 830, the low 812, settled at 814. That was down 8 cents a bushel. August beans had a high of 790, the low 772, settled at 775, down 4 1/2. Then we get into the new crop. September beans had a high of 717, the low 704, settled at 714. That was up 7 on the day. November had a high of 687, the low 670 and a quarter, settled at 684 and a half, up 11 and a half cents. January beans for next year, the high 688, the low 674, settled at 686, up 10 and a half. March of 05 beans, 683 the high, the low 673 and a half, settled at the high 683, up 7 and a half. And May beans for next year, 679 the high, 674 the low, 677 the close, up 6 as we end the week. In the products today, July soybean meal at a high of 260.30, the low 253, settled at 254.80, down 250. And August meal at a high of 254, the low 245.80, settled at 247, down 150. Soy oil ended the day up, though. July oil had a high of 28.39, the low 27.60, settled at 28.05, up 47. And the August bean oil contract had a high of 27.85, the low 27.15, settled at 27.55, up 37. Now for a look at how we did on the last day of trading for the month on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, here's Celeste.
Thanks, Tom. It was a higher day today for live cattle, lower day overall for feeder cattle, and lean hogs and bellies, mostly higher today. August feeder cattle, the high 108.35, the low 106.70, the settlement 107.20, that up 25. September 106.50, the high 105.25, the low 105.52.5, the settlement that down 10. October live, excuse me, October feeder cattle 105.50, the high, the low 104.30, the settlement 104.70, that down 20. June live cattle 88 even, the high 85.52.5, the low 87.67.5, the settlement that up $2. July live cattle 88.60, the high 88 even, the low 88.50, the settlement that unchanged. August 89.55, the high 87.70, the low 88.62.5, the settlement that up 65. June lean hog 76.25, the high 74.05, the low 75.82.5, the settlement that up 135. July 76.20, the high 74.20, the low 75.27.5, the settlement that up 97.5. August lean hogs 74.50, the high 72.80, the low 73.95, the settlement that up 105, and October lean hogs 62.65, the high 60.25, the low 60.27.5, the settlement that down 122.5. July bellies 113.77.5, the high 112.40, the low 113.70, the settlement that up 57.5. The Dow down 20 points at 10,185. The NASDAQ is up 4 at 1988. The S&P 500 down a fraction at 1121.
Today's programming is made possible in part by grants from 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign and Crossroads Global Handcrafts, 428 North Main in Bloomington, offering ground and whole bean coffee purchased from farmers using internationally recognized fair trade standards.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Ted Meyer from San Diego, California writes, "Dear Dr. Science, just what is baking soda made of? Is it really safe to make cookies with a product promoted to clean carpets, refrigerators, and de-stink your shoes?"
Of course it is. The people who tell you things on television have your best interests at heart. They spend a great deal of time and energy carefully analyzing everything they say before they say it. Baking soda is an especially wonderful product and has the wholehearted endorsement of those in the know. In fact, recent studies